The date is March 17th, 2000, and we're watching Final Destination. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Todd to my Alex.
Hello, everybody, it's Colin Stewart.
But that's only one D on that Todd. Only Todd with one D.
Yeah, that's rare.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever even known a Todd with only one D.
No, I can't say I have either, yeah. Well, this week we are looking back at St. Patrick's Day 2000, when the movies and theaters were Aaron Brockovich, The Next Best Thing, Mission to Mars, High Fidelity, and of course our movie for today, Final Destination, which earned $112.88 million on a $23 million budget. That's respectable to me.
Yeah, that's decent.
Not too bad, yeah.
Well, no. What the fuck? Spoilers?
Yeah, spoilers, yeah.
For some reason, it felt like it came too soon.
Yeah. No, we rushed through the beginning.
Right. Well, yeah. As always, there will be spoilers ahead, so please, if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, like slipping in the bathtub and getting hung to death, then please, yeah, hit pause, yeah, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Pretty spoiled, yeah. No, I was wondering whether it was more of a... if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, like having everything foreshadowed for you in every way possible.
Yeah.
I guess we rushed through the first one because the opening bit, because lately I've always had some sort of fun fact about the movie and its budget. Right. And we just happened to run into a lot of those. And this one, it was kind of like, nope, nothing special, but here's what'll slow us down. I've got 14 taglines for us, Colin. This is a big one. So here we go. The first tagline: most people have dreams. For Alex, this is real.
Okay, can I make a guess? Are any of the next five, don't let your dreams become a nightmare, or some dreams nightmare thing?
No, looking down my list, that is
his dream just became a nightmare.
That is the only one that actually mentions dreams out of all of them.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so sorry about that. Well, number two, face your deepest fears before they face you.
Okay, is any of them... death has a plan.
Well, we have... can you cheat death?
Ah, I was going to go for that.
Yeah? And we also have death doesn't take no for an answer. Death is coming. Those are three other ones, yeah? I thought he was just breathing hard. Well, next up we have death is the final destination. Boarding starts now. The next one, in the best twisted tradition of the Twilight Zone. Which seems a little boring. And interestingly, this was originally an X-Files episode pitch.
I was going to say, this doesn't strike me as this doesn't feel Twilight Zone to me at all.
Not necessarily, no. No. The next tagline, we're going to throw up a challenge to Wes Craven. We've got a film that decapitates Scream 3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Meet me in the ring, Scream.
That's aggressive.
Yeah. Well, the next one, on March 17th, figure out when it's coming back at you.
Okay.
Yeah. Next up, we have Intervention Comes at a Price.
That sounds like, I don't know, something for like an addict's movie of some
Yeah,
sort.
Maybe. Well, next, no accidents, no coincidences, no escapes. You can't cheat death.
I think that's the best one so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other one summed it up with, can you cheat death? Well, number 12, I'll see you soon. Was it a poster of death? And he says, I'll see you soon. Number 13, though, I remember is being on buses or on bus shelters.
Oh, yeah.
Is next stop, it's you. So Yeah. And finally, number 14, are you ready to match wits with the Grim Reaper? I'm like, that's Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yeah.
So you have 14 taglines. None of them are great. So let's go to Colin and find out more with a 60-second synopsis.
Alrighty. After boarding a plane to Paris for a class trip, Alex has a premonition that the plane is going to explode on takeoff. This leads to him causing a scene on the plane, and he, along with a teacher and five other classmates, are forced to deplane and wait for a later flight. When the plane actually explodes, it sets off a chain of events where those who escape begin to meet their untimely demise in other ways. Alex begins to realize that the Reaper is coming for all of them, and tries to figure out how can he cheat death twice.
Yep. Yeah, there we go. That's Final Destination. Yeah, in this horror movie month, I mean, we've done a musical, we've done whatever the fuck David made us watch, and so it's nice to kind of go back to a horror movie that is the kind of thing that I used to watch, because I'm not a big fan of scary. I don't love fear, but for some reason, things like the Saw franchise, the Scream franchise, even Urban Legends, and I Know What You Did Last Summer, those ones, I liked that era of horror movie, and Final Destination just slotted itself right in there.
Yeah, it's like the teen era.
Yeah,
it's like this. It's like you had these movies on one side, and then you had like the American Pie, Van Wilders on the other side. Like,
yeah,
to me, they're all kind of like the same early 2000s like teen films.
Yeah, even though I don't normally love horror movies, because I was sucked into all the 10 Things I Hate About Yous and the Get Over Its and the American Pies of the world, these were just an extension of those. These were the scary extension. So I was there for Final Destination. I loved all these movies. I love a Rube Goldberg chain of events, and boy, oh boy, when this came around, I was there for it, and all of them as they came out. So, Colin, I mean, we discussed in the tail end of the last episode, but yeah, you said that for you, these are ones that you are familiar with, and a reason for some fears for your generation.
Yeah, it's funny. Final Destination, I think, is one of those. It's like I remember, and I knew what the premise was because I remember the trailers being on when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely seen a few of the franchise, but I realized after watching this one that I've never seen this one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. The one that I remember most, and the one I always say is like every person my age, this will never, like, drive behind a log truck, because there's the one where the guy, they drive behind a log truck.
The highway logging truck, yeah.
And then, I don't know if it's the same movie, but then the other one I remember is when those girls get, like, burned to death in the tanning bed.
That might be the same one, because the accident from the third one is the roller coaster.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember, one of the deaths that for some reason stands out to me is the guy that falls off the fire escape and then has a ladder impale his skull.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I don't remember which one that one's from either. That's probably the second one as well. I think the first and second ones are probably the ones that I have the most knowledge of. Okay. The third one and The Final Destination. Those are a little bit of a blind spot for me. Like, I'm not as familiar.
Yeah, so I'm kind of like, it's one of those, I've always thought Final Destination was a cool premise.
Mm-hmm,
but I definitely haven't, again, like you, I'm not like a big horror movie guy, so it's like, if I watched it, it was like, somebody put it on.
Yeah, okay, you didn't seek it out.
So like, for me, so yeah, I was like, I know I've definitely seen one or two of them, but funny enough, I hadn't seen this one before.
Okay, right on. Well, there we go. Let's jump into Final Destination, directed by James Wong, who made his directorial debut on this. He also did Final Destination 3, and then, like, the one, Dragon Ball Evolution. Huh? There's a classic, yeah. And a lot of X-Files. So I'm wondering, you know, with the fact that this was originally a pitch for an X-Files script. Maybe that's why he's like, you know what? I could develop that into a movie. I don't know.
Yeah.
Ballsy for a first-time director. Produced by Glenn Morgan, Craig Perry, and Warren Zeid, and written by Glenn Morgan, Jeffrey Reddick, and James Wong. So, got one of the producers writing, we got the director writing. So, this movie, I mean, I found a couple of translations. I love these. The Chinese version of this movie is called The Death God Comes. And in South Korea, it's just titled Destination. I find that interesting. But this movie really could be like gaslighting the movie, or like foreshadowing the movie, or Easter egg the movie, because watching it critically and reading the trivia that goes along with this movie, holy shit, is there a lot put into this movie to like just plot everything out for you. Like, they are spoon feeding you so much. Like, you are so oversaturated with the information coming at you with this movie that it's even hard to take it all in without knowing about it ahead of time. It's insane.
Yeah, it's kind of funny watching this one, because like after the first few scenes play out with the whole plane and everything and Pod, because it's like I go in knowing what the premise of it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept trying to figure out, like, how are the characters going to figure out what's happening?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just really not clear, like, how that's going to be set up. And
where is the leap of logic going to come from?
Yeah. And then we get this scene with this, like,
Tony Todd!
The mortician.
Yeah, Candyman.
And, yeah, and it's just like, maybe the best performance in the entire movie, because it's just like so out there and he's just giving it like 500%.
Oh yeah, that's Tony Todd for you. I mean, think Smallville's. He's the jitters guy, right? Like, he always has some creepy standout performance.
Yeah. But yeah, when that ended up being how it all came about, I mean, I had more questions than answers, but I was just kind of like, what a weird... I mean, I guess the question that I was left in at the end of this movie was, is that death? Is he actually a mortician, or is he the actual embodiment of death?
Is he the hood and the sickle, the scythe? Yeah. He's the director and Tony Todd have both come out to say that no, he's not. He's just surrounded by death. So I guess, you know, as a mortician, you know the design of death? You know the design?
Yeah, okay. I don't know.
It's just very intuitive. I don't know. Maybe he reads a lot. He's not actually supposed to be death. Like, Tony Todd was not playing him as death.
But you fooled me.
Well, exactly. Yeah, like, it really is one of those things where it's like, well, you could read it either way, and either way makes sense.
I mean, yeah, I guess
I'll
my
point... I'll see you soon, right? Like, he's got that line, yeah.
I guess my point in saying that was more like, it kind of a little bit determines how I really think about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like the movie more if he is death, except for the fact that I wish there would have been some kind of, like, I don't know, after-credit scene.
Yeah,
like
you wish he had a second scene?
Little nod to him at the end, or, like, maybe he comes back in, like, a later movie or something like that. But yeah, if he's not death, then it makes even less sense. Like, why would these kids just believe this crazy mortician? I don't know. It was strange.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, we're already talking about Tony Todd. Let's run down this cast of characters quickly and see who's in this movie, because like we said, we're right in the heart of the teenage era of movies.
Yes. So we have Devon Sawa. Teen heartthrob as Alex Browning. Although,
was he a teen heartthrob?
He for sure was. I like, I don't know. I grew up with like some foster sisters who were regular readers of, I don't know, Tiger Beat and all that. And I remember Devon Sawa being like right up there with Jonathan Taylor Thomas as like one of the it guys. But in watching this movie, I was kind of surprised because I was like, a lot happened to him between Casper and this movie in terms of, like, I don't I feel like maybe he lost that baby cuteness he had.
Yeah, and especially if you've seen him more recently, Devon Sawa, he aged. Yeah. A lot, you know, some of these youthful looking stars from the past, they get older and they don't look much different, but yeah, Devon Sawa aged. He definitely
Gotcha.
aged. Yeah.
We have Ali Larter as, is it Claire or is her
No,
name actually Clear
it is
Rivers?
Clear Rivers. Yeah, I always thought it was Claire, but it is Clear. Yeah. What's funny is apparently Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst were originally up for these two parts. So we could have seen Spider-Man before Spider-Man.
Interesting. And then maybe Devon Sawa could have been Peter Parker.
That's right.
Kerr Smith is Carter Horton. Kristen Cloak is Valerie Lewton. Daniel Roebuck is Agent Ween. Roger Guinevere Smith is Agent Shrek. Chad E. Daniella is Todd Wagner. Sean William Scott is Billy Hitchcock.
Yeah, see, I feel like a lot of these people didn't really take off, but like, it seems like Sean William Scott is like the next biggest star of this movie. Like, you know, because he would have been riding American Pie fame at the time.
Yeah. Tony Todd is William Bloodworth. Amanda Detmer is Terry Chaney. Brendan Fair is George Wagner. I was surprised when he got killed on the plane. I thought for sure he was going to be a bigger part of this movie just because I remember around this time he was in that Roswell show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And now we're into non-linkers. I don't know how much further we want to go into this. I've got
Yeah.
nothing else to say about any of the other people that are here.
Ali Larter is so young in this movie. I
Yeah,
was
she
trying to think
definitely
because
is.
the only other thing I know her from is Heroes, probably. It's what I can think of, but
Oh, yeah. So I feel like now you understand also why the number 180 appears so much in other Final Destination movies, even though the number 180 has no significance whatsoever when it comes to a logging truck or a roller coaster.
yeah, I guess.
Because that's a trend that I remember that they kept throughout the movies, is the 180 was like significant no matter what.
That's the number of death. I was also thinking though that I hope that whoever like the families of all the children and people on that flight sued whatever airline that was for putting that plane in the air because I don't know, premonition or not, the amount of stuff that Alex like sees on the way in, I don't feel like I'm staying on that plane.
No, that door does not look like it would seal properly with those scratches as that he
No.
inspects as he's coming in. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't know if like airline safety was different pre-9/11 or something, but man.
I no, because I did have the same sort of thought with the fact that what's the first thing he does to test whether his dream was going to come true again is he goes and sees if his tray table is defective in the other seat. So yeah, that's telling right there that this plane is not good for international travel right now. It,
No, that's like a 7-hour flight too. Like you're not.
yeah. Yeah, I can't put my tray table up. I literally can't, and that's one of the only rules you guys always have for us. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, listen, I can't. I was listening to a podcast recently that was talking about, maybe it was Armchair Expert. They were talking about how like these people boarded a plane and then had to deplane because the captain's chair wasn't like was malfunctioning.
Yeah.
And then I watched this movie and I was like, there's just no way that this plane is
It's
airworthy.
not airworthy, not at all. Yeah. And what is it about when he's looking at it through the window? Like, it looks so fake. Why couldn't you guys have filmed with a real plane outside?
Yeah. I was surprised to see Sean William Scott in this movie. I don't know
Yeah.
how I feel like I'm pretty well versed in him. I when he appeared, I at first I was like oh, is this like I was mentally doing the math like this is 2000, American Pie was 99, so like was he famous or not yet? He probably would have filmed this before he was actually like
Yeah.
famous-ish.
Filming this around the time that American Pie dropped, sort of
Yeah.
thing. Yeah.
But it's funny because this character is like firmly in between Stifler and the character that he plays in Dude, Where's My Car? Like he's a little bit bro-y, but like still kind of like timid.
And he's a punching bag for some reason, which is also weird. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I was curious to see whether or not he was going to play like an actual role, or if this was just going to be like, oh, a blink and you miss some type character.
Yeah. Yeah, like he doesn't stick around long in the grand scheme of things, I guess, but
I also thought really weird move on the part of this production team to put him in a New York Rangers hockey jersey that has his last name on it, but no numbers.
Yeah.
It's like these people have never seen hockey before. Like, were you afraid of offending somebody, or you just couldn't just, you were like, well, we don't know who's on the Rangers. Like, we don't know, like,
well,
we don't want to steal someone's number.
Yeah, like, they were probably looking at the fact of, you know, we want to put 69 on there, and it's, and for some reason, standards and practices wouldn't allow it for PG-13. But, yeah, like, that's the clear answer, right? That number, yeah, you've got to have 69 on the back of a Stifler-type character's Stifler Light. That's what he is in this movie, yeah.
But then, do they ever explain what the deal is between Alex and, what's that jock guy's name?
Carter?
Carter? Yeah, do they, like, Carter, I don't understand what this dude's issue is. Like, he's just from, like, the get pissed off at Alec. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. No, the only thing I take from that is that they want to establish that there is some sort of history that makes it so that Alex is definitely not part of the team. I guess, I don't know, it's a way to establish the hierarchy without, like, having, like, a group of jocks on the plane, I guess.
Yeah, to me, yeah, it was kind of like they're just trying to establish, like, here are our high school tropes. We have the hot girl and the jock. We have the weird, you know, girl next door, quiet girl. We have Alex, who's kind of just like a normal guy. Todd's the nerd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, we have to make the girl next door really interesting by making her sitting there reading Death of a Salesman and
Prophet of Cancer.
She can hear the French announcement and translate it without even thinking of it, without even looking up from her book. You know, she's interesting. She's quirky and interesting. I find it hard to believe that JFK International Airport would have French announcements happening over the PA. Like, even if you're in the international section, that's not an official language in the United States. So would the French airline be making French announcements? Because I don't think sitting at our own airport, I've ever heard, like, you know, the Japanese airline making Japanese announcements or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right to me. I don't think an American airport is making announcements in French.
Yeah.
The teacher set this up. He paid someone off.
Watching this movie, I'm really thankful that, like, all airports have digital boards now.
Yeah.
This must have been, like, I don't know when that changed over, but I'm so, like, if I had to go to an airport where I had to hear that, like,
click, 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 yeah, yeah.
Like, I would lose my mind.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Especially at a place like JFK or like LAX, where it would have been, like, you know, things would have just been changing constantly. It would have been never ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our foreshadowing, I mean, it all begins right from the beginning. Like, even in the credits where we've got the hanging guy and we've got the person that gets killed by a guillotine, you know, it's like, oh, hey, look at that. That's how two of the people die in this movie. They're setting it up the whole way through. But then, you know, like, even from Alex, you know, saying that he wants to keep the bag on his tag or the tag on his bag because it was good luck. You know, he survived the last plane and his mom's like, don't be silly, and rips it off. And it's all dramatic when they rip it off. It just, but one thing that I read about that I found interesting is when the plane does explode at the airport and we've got Sean William Scott looking out the window, you can see, like, the reflection of the plane across his face right where he gets decapitated later on. Like, it's, there are so many attention to detail moments like that. The cart number that when they do step into the plane, the cart that goes underneath them is cart number 666.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like, it's I don't know. It's just, it's so weird. Yeah. The actual premonition dream, though, I mean, they did a solid job with this one. I mean, just like the truck in the second one, just like the roller coaster in the third one, they do set up a very good action sequence here, but it feels so short compared to, I feel like the log truck disaster takes up a longer chunk of the movie. Like, the plane crash is only a few minutes long, whereas it feels like the log one takes, like, 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I did think it was cool, though. Like, I liked, you know, even the effect when, like, they're getting, like, they show, like, Alex, like, getting burned alive and stuff. I thought those are cool effects.
Yeah. Yeah. The person getting sucked out the side of it. And
I'm sure that, yeah, that was cool, too. I'm sure that in later movies, it probably becomes similar to, like, how we were talking, like, with, like, Nightmare on Elm Street, how, you know, it's really small budget, makes a lot of money, and then every time the budget kind of goes up. So maybe the premonition death scene gets longer as, like, more success came.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But the one thing that always has kind of bugged me about it, though, is we do see this big, long thing, the person getting pulled out the side, the oxygen mask coming down, people getting thrown down the aisle, all this other stuff going on. But when it actually does blow up from the airport perspective, it's like, well, there they go. Boom! Right? Like, that's not how it happened in his dream. Yeah. We're supposed to see people flying through the air and shit.
I was thinking, like, you know, I get it is a little wild that they go with, like, that the FBI, like, that Alex is somehow a suspect in the thing blowing up. Like, there's just no real reason for him to be, like, I don't know.
I can understand it at first. You know, someone gets off screaming, saying the plane's going to explode. I mean, this is as bad as mentioning the word bomb in an airport these days. I feel like that part of it would have him at least having some questions asked.
I guess, you know? I was wondering with this movie, like, I didn't mind the way that things played out, but there were parts of it where I was kind of wanting more, like you said, gaslighting, like where Alex is being, like, gaslit, where he's like, I think what would have made this movie more Twilight Zone is if nobody ever believed him. Like, if he was just constantly, like, shouting in the wind and like nobody ever believed him or ever, and people just, like, passed it off. Like, that kind of doesn't really happen. Like, the whole way through, the FBI people are like, so you're doing something shady. Like, they're never just like, ah, it's just a coincidence or whatever.
Yeah. At the point where they realize, or where they discover what the cause of the crash was, that's the point where they should have eased up on him. You'd think they would have eased up on him. Yeah.
Yeah. I also kind of felt like, I didn't like that they gloss up, I mean, okay, my favorite death is like the teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, I just thought that one was so, like, you know, there's so many, what do you call it? Like, red herrings. Like, you think, oh, maybe it's going to be the fire. It's going to be the jab to the neck that gets her. But then it's,
well, and that's why I thought it was like gaslighting the movie, because all the deaths full of red herrings, they're all gaslighting is what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, I thought that was in kind of like a perfect world, not a perfect, but like, I wish they would have done more with that. Like, they set up this whole thing where, like, Alex is, like, now being legitimately implicated in a crime with, like, an eyewitness who sees
him running out of the house. Yeah, yeah.
And they kind of just, like, gloss over it.
Uh-huh.
Like, it never really, like, I think I would have liked it better if the house would have never blown up and it was more of, like, a manhunt for him that, like, I don't know, in a weird way kind of led with him getting gunned down by the police. Like, that's how
death gets him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it's true, but even something like Todd's death, when you go back and watch the movie a second time, you realize that, like, when you're watching the movie for the first time, you don't know what's going on yet, because we haven't discovered that that's what is actually happening, is that death is hunting these people down. But with Todd's, it's the same sort of thing. There's water on the floor, and you think that, oh, you know, he's got the razor. You think that's going to kill him for some reason. Like, somehow he's going to slit his jugular accidentally when he's shaving. Like, or he's going to slip or something. There's all these different things with Todd's as well that when you know to look for it, you see them. But the first time you watch it, they don't quite, all the pieces don't quite go together. A few of those things looked like they were more backups than anything else.
Yeah, I think the one thing with Todd's death that I didn't like was, so my memory when I went into this movie was like, I knew the premise, but from what I remember from the other movie I watched, it's like they did a way better job of like, oh, just just weird random thing, like a strap breaks.
Yeah,
and now all this shit is happening, or like, oh, a piece of metal busts, and now like these things happen because the catastrophe happens, and they were going that route. But like, what I didn't like, so it starts off with like the water and the toilet, but like the toilet's leaking.
Yeah,
and to me, I was like, okay, well, it's just like, let's just see how the leaking water now. But then when they show like the water has like a mind of its own, that's what I wasn't really a fan of. Like where now it's showing like, oh, the water is like being, I don't know, like steered by the spirit of death or whatever.
Yeah, like when the water recedes at the end too, like,
because like I like in the teacher death how it's like, oh, she tosses the rag on the knife thing.
Yeah, on the knife and block. Yeah,
she pulls the knife and the one like stabs her right in the chest, and it's still not enough to do the job. And then when Alex comes in, it's like, he hits something that like knocks the chair and it like smashes like it in. So it's like,
she might have been okay if that chair hadn't fallen. Good job, Alex. But it's okay. The place exploded anyway.
I will say that this movie with I think it's like Valerie or Vicky, the one who gets hit by the bus. And even with Sean William Scott, they do such a bad job of telegraphing like, this person's gonna die because they're like center frame and they're just talking, oh no, and they're just backing up. And there's like this wide angle. And you're like, oh, okay, well, like something's gonna happen to you now. So.
Yeah, that's Terry. It's nice though that it comes so fast.
Yeah.
Right? And that's kind of cool. And it's another one of those moments where the blood that's on their faces, it actually shows numbers.
What?
Yeah, so Carter has like a faint 5 on his cheek. The blood splatter makes up a 5 because he's the 5th one that dies. Yeah, and and with Alex, he has a 7 on his cheek, cause, you know, the amount of students that are gonna die. Like, it's like, why? You know, like the John Denver plane every time. Like, it's like, there were other people that died in a plane crash. Why does it always have to be John Denver? Mix it up a little bit.
Get some Buddy Holly.
You'd get some Buddy Holly in there. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's where I say they spoon feed you as much as possible. You know, all his little premonitions, seeing things in the windows, the trains and the buses and everything in the windows.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I am impressed with though, with this movie is how much weight they give the actual first event though. Like, after the opening bit where the plane blows up, there is a long section where it's like, oh, this is kind of real. This is really probably how people would react. The memorial and all that. I kind of like how everyone is terrified of Alex rather than, you know, thankful to him. Except the interesting girl.
Yeah. I thought that should be real. I also thought if there should have been some aspect where people think like some weird religious aspect where all of a sudden he's got like
followers,
worshiping at his doorstep.
Yeah. I was wondering whether there was supposed to be some sort of significance to the amount of time that passed though, right? Like they're like 39 days later and that's how many students died. So it's like, is that why they waited 39 days for their memorial? Like,
I was thinking that too. Is that, that seems, I get like, I don't know. I was trying to think about if that was a good thing or not. I kind of feel like maybe you would want to have a memorial faster, but maybe you wanted to wait 39 for some kind of like significance.
Yeah, that's what it's gotta be. Yeah. I think Todd's death, though, is the one that scares me the most.
Yeah.
Just because of, I mean, and you know, like, yeah, they have the little scissors to the red herring of him with scissors up his nose. You're like, oh, he's gonna stab himself in the brain or something. But the fact that when he's in the tub, he spills soap so that he can't get a grip either. Like, for there's something about that that makes his the most terrifying of all of them.
Yeah, there must be some really slick soap. I don't know. I was just... Yeah, I didn't mind that one, but I was kind of just like, I was more struck by how it's like making it look like he could, like it was almost like Death was trying to make it look like he committed suicide,
Yeah.
when my memory was more like it should have just been like these weird, unfortunate accidents.
But and that goes to the idea that you have that people shouldn't have believed him so soon. There should have been more doubt on Alex's story from everybody instead of acceptance right away, just because of the fact that it is made to look like an accident. I mean, it sucks that we recorded the endings of these two episodes out of order because, like, it's another comparison moment to next week's episode, Friday or Nightmare on Elm Street, where why does Freddy decide to make this one look like an accident? It's the same thing here. Why does Death decide to make the first one look like an accident if there's not going to be any other doubt cast on Alex because of it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
even the premonition thing is strange. Like, why is it that he doesn't see the like for Todd, he goes there because this weird thing happens, but all of a sudden it like the newspaper gets cut up and it gives him the little like the little word or
Yeah,
whatever.
yeah, yeah.
Like in that situation, it's like someone's sending him like a literal message, whereas like in the other ones, like you said, he's seeing stuff in the window or in like a dream.
Yeah.
I don't know. The mortician goes through such a like big thing about like explaining like who Death is and what and that, but it's like, what is the force that is helping out Alex?
Yeah, true.
And why? You know, like what perp for what purpose other than so he can make this movie?
Yeah. Well, and then for some reason we also make Clear kind of clairvoyant. Huh? See what I did there? But, you know, because she also kind of feels the same things as him, but not as clearly as he does. Oh, there's so many puns with it. Yeah. But, you know, I do want to correct you on something. It isn't a newspaper that hits the fan. It is a magazine.
Oh, right. It's, yeah,
And what
sorry.
kind of magazine? Well, let's talk about it in Sponsorship Corner. Actually, the fan itself is a fan that I've never heard of. So, anyway. So, Sponsorship Corner brought to you by MoviePosters.com. With over 100,000 titles to choose from, MoviePosters.com is the number one destination for posters from your favorite films and stars. Use Like This One 15 at checkout for 15% off your purchase. And I did look, there is a Final Destination poster available on MoviePosters.com, so go check it out and then get 15% off it if this happens to be your favorite movie. But always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Final Destination is brought to you by Typhon Fa- Oh my god. I'm just realizing right now, I think that's actually supposed to be pronounced Typhoon. It's spelt Taifun. That's what the fan is. But I think it's Typhoon. So I'm gonna say Typhoon fans. Pontiac and Chevrolet vehicles, Nike, JanSport backpacks, Whoppers candy, FedEx, Nortel phones, Python garage door openers, First Strike matches, the Toronto Raptors, why did I say it like that? The Toronto Raptors, the New York Rangers, USA Today, Joyce and Penthouse magazines, H&L Publishing, and the movie Pecker. Plus the probably fictional The Coffee Beanery and Volée Airlines. It's just got to be a French word. You know, they're going to France, so Volée Airlines. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, the old Penthouse magazine against the Typhoon fans. Clever Typhoon! But, I mean, typhoons, they're all water related, aren't they? Isn't that what a typhoon?
Yeah, is a typhoon like a water tornado?
Yeah, I thought it was. Or is that a cyclone?
Or a tsunami? It's maybe cyclone.
A tsunami is like a tidal wave.
All right, I'm not going to pretend to be a...
Yeah, meteorologist? No, I'm a...
Weatherologist.
Weatherologist. I'm not even going to use the correct name. Yeah. Yeah, so Clear was also at Todd's house, though, because she had a weird feeling as well. She can feel death all around them. And so that's when they decide to break into the morgue to look at Todd's body. You know, and the delicious scene with the creepy morticians. Morticia Adams. Yeah. Mortician. Having trouble with words today. Jesus.
That's definitely, if I had to give an award for performance in this
MVP
in this,
scene. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just got the crazy guys going max.
Yeah. And then after that is the scene where we get Carter for some reason just pulling over in his car to confront Alex because he sees him sitting there.
Yeah, Carter's a real Flash Thompson in this
yes,
in this,
yes,
in this movie and in this moment.
Oh man, yeah he sure is. And of course Terry, you know, like, leave them alone. Why are you
stop yeah. it, Carter.
And then she gets hit by the bus. Yeah. And I guess they, there's like the moment with the Alka-Seltzer immediately after she gets hit by the bus, and they actually extended it, like the Alka-Seltzer drops, just because of the fact that people were still recovering from the fact that she got hit by the bus, because it's so shocking and quick. Yeah. Even though apparently you saw it coming a mile away. I remember the first time I saw that in theaters, and like, it blew my fucking mind. Yeah,
I mean, I imagine it would. I think it's just one of those things. It's like, it was hard, like, I obviously like didn't go into this movie as like a blank slate. I think when you know what the premise is, and like, and then you're like, I'm like trying to like watch it with a critical eye, it's like all of a sudden it's, and because we've just watched so many movies, I think at this point it's like you just kind of like you see the, it's one of those things where you like see the puppet strings.
Yeah. That is one of the reasons I think why I like the amount of misdirects that are given throughout this movie, though.
Yeah.
Like, even when he goes about death-proofing the cabin, and there's the bit where he forgot to tie up the fish hook or the fishing rod, and so, like, through a wacky set of circumstances, he almost gets impaled by a saw. But then, like, the joke about the tetanus with the hook, you would have gotten me with tetanus, that's not as funny as the fact that something came through that door. And he doesn't even acknowledge the fact that something came through the door. He's like, oh, fish hook. Makes no sense to me.
It's kind of like, there are certain times where, like, the director needed to make a little bit of a choice about how Alex's premonitions work. Like, it almost needed to be like he had spider sense in a certain way. Like, there's that scene, I think, when he's running from the cabin and he falls down the hill.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden he, like, magically is able to, like, stop before he would have, like, just, like, went face impaled into, like, a stick or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, how did you know that was going to happen? Or, like, is that just coincidence? Or, like,
I think that one was luck. Yeah. And then Death tries to drown him as well.
Mm-hmm.
By making the tree land on him. But there's a part of me that wonders, though, but it's not his turn.
Yeah.
So would Death have actually, is that why he was able to get away? Because it wasn't his turn? Death was busy stalking Clear with electricity?
I also wasn't sure how I felt. Like, the whole addition of this, like, turn-based, like, death-killing thing was, I thought that might be where they, like, jump the shark in this movie a little bit.
But that's how they do all the movies. In every movie, you have to figure out who dies first, because that's who's next.
Yeah, I guess. It's just, I think it's a weird cop-out that it's like, It didn't get me now, so it skips. And then it's like this weird, like, it's sort of
Yeah.
like turn-based role play. It's like, okay, well, your turn is over. Like, on to the next one. You rolled your dice, and you beat me. So like now it's your turn. Like, now you roll for initiative. And like,
Well, now, here's the one thing that, like, if you think that shit was jumping the shark, here's where it would have gotten really stupid. There was going to be more romantic subplot between Claire and Alex that ended up getting deleted from the final film. Because, like, the beach scene was going to end up with them kissing, and then later Claire was going to find out she was pregnant. So
oh man.
there's an alternate version where, like, Alex saves her from the wires but dies from electrocution and catching fire, and then, like, Claire has her baby and
Dies in childbirth. The cycle is
no,
closed.
she and Carter create a plaque to add to the memorial. Yeah, but, like, it's the super baby that kind of comes out of it at the end that she names Alex. Like, it's so that would have been a dumb ending. And, like, my only thought that would have made it worse is if we realized that by bringing life into it, that's what cancels out Death's plan.
Yeah, can
That's
you
what would have been,
imagine?
like, at
They're
least it didn't go that far. But yeah, there was supposed to be more of a love story. I kind of like how it's just the hand holding at the end, where it's like, okay, you guys had a connection, and a year later, you guys are kind of into it finally.
Yeah, I don't know how it would have fit if they were like, oh, the only antidote to death is life. And so they
Yeah.
just like try to furiously have sex to create a child to like, I don't know.
I mean, it would have been something I would have tried in high school, I guess.
Yeah. That would have been an interesting way to go
Armageddon,
about it.
there's an asteroid heading towards the world. What if the only way to stop it is to have sex with each other right now? Yeah. Oh boy. Well, yeah, I mean, maybe the director wasn't thinking clearly of how the rules of death were because he was too busy, like, plugging in all these extra little Easter eggs and everything throughout this movie. Because there was also a bit of trivia I found where they say that many of the props in this film contain references to assassinated presidents or almost presidents, because Ms. Luton's leaking coffee cup has an inscription for Mount Abraham High. Carter's car has a license plate that starts with RFK, and the plane, of course, takes off at JFK. So we've got all these assassinations that are, hinted throughout the movie as well. Like, death is everywhere in this movie. The director made sure of it.
Nice. I'm just reading. I was just curious because I don't remember the sequels, but when you were mentioning like how the movie I wanted to see it turns out that Alex does die between movies.
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, I remember that. But Allie Larder does survive, right?
Yeah,
B
yeah,
because
she
she
does.
gets to play the creepy mortician in the next movie.
Does she?
Well,
Oh,
essentially,
just the role,
she's the one that knows death has a plan.
Death has a plan. Was that one of the penguins?
No, I don't think it
Oh,
was.
that should have been it.
Now I have to go back and check. I'll
Ooh,
see you
Tony Todd
soon.
shows back up in Final Destination 5.
Oh, okay. Oh, there's five of them. Jeez, I forgot that.
And he's also coming back for the 2025 Final Destination Bloodlines.
Oh. Okay. Rebooting Final Destination. I did not know that was happening. So one thing I've never noticed before that I noticed on this watch is when the scene happens where Carter's driving like a dick because he decides, what the hell? Why bother? We're all gonna die anyway. Even after he had his line earlier, which was going to come back to bite him of, I'm never gonna die. Yeah. Have you read the script? You haven't read ahead in the script yet, have you, Carter? But I've never noticed that he wets himself.
Oh, I didn't know
Yeah, his pants are soaked. Yeah. So I'm like, well, that's a nice realistic touch, I guess, because yeah, I think you probably would pee yourself in that moment. And once he decides that, fuck it, it's not my time. And then, of course, the car doesn't start. And, of course, the doors don't open. And, of course, his seatbelt is stuck.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping Carter was gonna. I was surprised that he made it as far as he did. I was gonna say, I guess he doesn't make it right to the end, but.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's when, poor Sean William Scott. I don't even know his name. It's just Sean William Scott. Poor Stifler gets, oh, Billy. That's what it was. That's when he gets the piece of car through his face. Now, when a train hits something as big as a car, right? Like, I mean, this happens in Back to the Future Part 3. I've seen this multiple times in movies where a train...
Just talk about how you've seen it, like, you know, just in Edmonton lately.
Oh, that too, yeah. Jesus fucking Christ. But when it happens, are they supposed to stop?
Yeah, I don't see any situation where a train hits a vehicle and just... And
doesn't put on the brakes. Yeah.
Their protocol is just like, oh, keep going. Yeah. Keep hauling.
Yeah, just call it in. Yeah. Yeah, it feels like you should see sparks flying off the wheels as it tries to stop. Yeah, because I know it's not going to stop on a dime, but... Oh, yeah, like, I don't know what's going on in this city. Fuck. I've come up with a couple of theories. One theory of mine is that they have put up too many intersections that have no right turn signals. Like, not just along the LRT. Like, just in the city in general, there's now too many places where you can't make a right turn on a red. And yeah. People are getting impatient. Plus, as someone that has to drive near those areas where the trains are regularly, there are days that I will sit there at like 4 minutes waiting for my signal. Like, they need to improve the signal, like, signal patterns. Yeah. So that you can turn right more often. Because when you're sitting there for 5 minutes, it's like, seriously, I could have gone like 10 times by now. So I think people are just getting impatient. I think it's less about stupidity and more about impatience in this city.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'll never discount the stupidity factor, but...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, the amount of accidents in this city lately as well, like, it's just... Ugh.
I don't know. I mean, impromptu shout out to before I started following Gagwave on Instagram, I never realized how many vehicles like flip over in this city on a daily basis.
Jesus. Yeah. I found an interesting detail in Claire's room is the fact that she has four different Eiffel Towers. I guess she's must have been like dying to go to Paris, even though she's acting all cool reading her book. She doesn't look excited to go to Paris, but I found that interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, so Alex at one point realizes he screwed up on his calculation because he never actually moved.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, is he never actually moved. So, yeah, he finds out Clear is next, and he runs to Clear's house, which is dangerous as fuck. I mean, yeah, like, let's see how many different things we can throw at that house. And I don't understand her choices. Like, you know that death is after you at this point, and you're going to climb the trellis? Like,
in a lightning storm?
But, like, there must have been an easier way to get away from the water-electricity combination that was happening at that moment.
Because doesn't it start, like, doesn't she originally go out to, like, save her dog?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the, like, to me,
the down power lines, and she's like, I gotta save the dog.
Yeah, to me, I'm like, you know, screw that. That's bait, you know?
The dog dies.
That dog is bait now. Like, don't fall for it.
Don't fall for that, yeah. But yeah, we've got the like, spinning, whatever it is, clothesline umbrella thing that almost impales her, and yeah, water and electricity don't mix. But then she's like, she ends up like Clark Griswolding her way across the eaves trough. Like, it's, you know, like, fuck. That's a dangerous scene.
Ooh. They need to make a Christmas Final Destination if they haven't already. That'd be epic. What a great Christmas movie that would be.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a pretty good one because the opening premise has something to do with slippery roads, right? Like it's just a harmless car accident or,
Yeah.
ice storm multi-car pileup. Yeah. Or is that too tame? It's not logs bouncing across the road and shit.
Would be a good way to start. Like if I had to do a Christmas final destination vacation, final vacation,
Yeah.
I would do something like that. Or maybe I would actually even start like where it's like they're gonna it's like mix it up with Home Alone, like the family was about to go to Paris and
The family cheats death.
they forgot a kid at home, so the whole family has to leave the
Alternate
plane.
universe Home Alone.
Yeah. And
They
then
realize Kevin's not there.
it's like, yeah, then as they're like celebrating this family dinner that they shouldn't have had or getting ready for Christmas, it's like one by one, like I don't know, dad slips on the roof putting up Christmas lights and gets hung by the Christmas lights or something. And then
Nice.
like
Nice. It
that's how
writes
I'd
itself.
yeah, there we
Yeah.
go.
Yeah. You still have the wet bandits, and they're going to meet an even grislier end.
And you have the old guy who knows everything about death.
Well, there we go. That is Final Destination. Oh boy. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored a 6.7 out of 10. Has a Metascore of 39. I don't like that. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 37% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 68%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like any number of Rube Goldberg type death moments, hit us with some reviews.
Alrighty. Tyler Matthews says 5 out of 5 stars. Final Destination is one of my favorite movies to watch with my friends, and with so many intense scenes and intense death scenes. The movie has one of the most infamous premonition scenes in movie history, with the airplane blowing up and starting the whole movie with the characters being picked off one by one. Tony Todd's cameo in this film was disturbing and creepy to tell what this movie is all about. The film doesn't have a serial killer killing innocent people, but has a supernatural ghost killing people, which is smart and not like a ripoff to the Scream films. Me and my friends had a great time watching this and one of the best experiences.
I think that also is one of the things that has always made this fun for me. Is, I mean, I already mentioned it a few times, but I love me a Rube Goldberg machine. And so I love the idea of the faceless, supernatural villain. Like I like that Tony Todd isn't death that's stalking people for real. I like these chain of events. And I think that is one thing that does set it apart from a Scream or an Urban Legend or an I Know What You Did Last Summer, as far as those go. And it's one of the things that I've always found clever about this franchise, I think.
Mediana Rizki says 5 out of 5 stars. Creepy and real. This movie was frightening for one simple reason. It isn't afraid to go the route of talking about death, fate, and if the inevitable is really unavoidable, or if death's plan can be fathomed and subsequently outwitted. The opening scene is downright scary. Come on, who hasn't got on a plane and wondered if it would crash? And let me tell you, I am not in a hurry to get on one now. Though the story is a little contrived and a bit predictable, though that is part of the story, the effect is still the same. The movie is not, despite what you may hear, a teen flick. Beg to differ. If you're a horror fan from any generation, trust me, you'll like it, as long as you go in wanting to see it and willing to actually think about the film and follow the storyline. Trust me on this one and give it a shot.
We have the jock, the princess, the nerd, the weirdo. Like it's a teen flick. You have the stereotypes. The difference is they're dying. That's the only difference. They're not trying to get with each other. They're just dying off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this last one from Leroy Housen, he says, I have seen this movie a lot in stores, but didn't think it'd be that good. But it was that good. Great story, great characters, all around awesome film. I highly recommend it if you've never seen it. The idea that you can't cheat death is simple but effective, because one day we will all have to face our bloody demise.
Ooh. Wow. That guy's trying to go dark. Oh boy. Final Destination. I was happy to visit this one. I will say that. It was interesting seeing Smallville people as a Smallville fan, because the one guy is Bug Boy, and of course Tony Todd from the Jitters episode. This was a fun one to go back to. That's all I have to say about this. Reading all the things on it, it was fun kind of spotting that stuff as I went through the movie, like all the little Easter eggs and... But I still had a good time with it. I still found the same suspense and everything that I originally found out of this movie, even though I basically knew what was coming and all that. But I enjoyed it for what it was, and this one was still charming to me. Yeah, I'm happy to have revisited the Final Destination of Earth. So, Colin, what about you? That you hadn't seen this one, so now that you've seen it, now that you've gone back to the roots of the Final Destination franchise, what do you think?
I couldn't help but watch it critically. Like, sometimes when we do the show, I'm able to, like, watch the movie once fresh. And yeah. and just take it in as it comes and like not critique okay. as I go, and then I'll watch it like a second time and I'll be more critical of it.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, this one I just like couldn't do it. I was just like thinking about it too much from the get go instead of like just letting it wash over me like I feel like I need to. So I didn't not enjoy it. I thought it was fun, but I just kind of felt like it was, I think it's a movie I would have really enjoyed if I watched it in a theater with a group of people. I think it's that type of movie. Like this is not a movie to sit and watch by yourself. It's a movie that's meant to be watched with a group and enjoyed with a group.
I think so. Yeah, because I agree with that, because my first exposure to this was in the theaters. Mm-hmm. I did see this in the theaters, and there is something that is great about a whole group of people reacting to Terry getting hit by a bus. And just, yeah. Oh, shit! Did that just happen? Like, yeah, there is something that's special about that moment.
Yeah. And so that's kind of my takeaway. I think that it's, like, it's not a movie I would never watch again, but I would love to, like, watch it, I think, in the theater if Cineplex ever did, like, if they did like
a throwback night. Yeah. A
throwback, like, Halloween thing or something like that. Because I think it's definitely fun.
Yeah.
And it's a fun movie of that era. You know, it gives me all my, like, it just, like, I always talk, same with, like, American Pie, like, it's, even though I hadn't seen it before, it's, like, I turn this movie on, and I see the people in it, and just the way it's shot, and the fashion, and I'm like, oh, I'm 14 again.
Yeah, yeah, you okay. Know? So, like, yeah, makes you I can feel see good that.
Like that.
It's nostalgia for the era, rather than the movie itself. Yeah, I've had that before with movies.
And it's kind of just, like, similar to the comedy aspect of the 2000s, just like, I kind of wish somebody was making movies like this still, you know, like, it's horror, but it doesn't have to be like super scary or super like crazy and graphic and like dark. Like, it can just be like jumpy and funny and, you know, enjoyable.
Yeah. All right. And hey, we just found you a new Sean William Scott movie.
Exactly. You know,
look at that.
Checked one off the box.
That you didn't know you needed to check off.
I feel like we might have to, I don't know what we're missing from his catalog of the early 2000s, but we might have to devote a month to Sean William Scott next year.
I don't know if we have like a whole month of, there's Evolution. And there's like Goon.
Yeah, Role Models.
Oh, Role Models. I forgot about Role Models.
You could do another American Pie.
Yeah. I mean, for February, I was already thinking of Kevuary.
Oh, yeah.
And do Kevin Costner movies. Field of Dreams and The Bodyguard and Waterworld. Huh?
I don't know. That's too much, I think. I don't know. Kevin Costner, I think he's the type of guy you need to sprinkle in. I don't know if I can. I don't know if I could devote a whole month to him. Maybe like, I don't know. We could do Tom Cruise, or like maybe Tom Hanks.
Hanksuary. Yeah.
We did Meg. Was Meguary last year?
Yeah, Meguary was last year. Yeah, well, this year. Yeah, yeah.
February. Maybe we need to find a year where we can do one actor per month.
Now we lost the momentum of having something good to go out on. Fuck. I threw that off with Kevuary. You're like, wah, wah, wah. I can't do that much, Kevin Costner. Fuck that
No,
shit.
absolutely not.
Yeah, new Sean William Scott movie for you. All right. Well, there we go. That is a Final Destination, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy. If you like that show, just go tell someone. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast, or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars, help drive us up the charts, and use those funky algorithms of iTunes and all those podcatchers to help move us up the charts and help us get noticed. Or if you want to be a financial supporter of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and you become an executive producer so you get a shout out like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
Check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
A big thank you to our sponsorship corner sponsor, MoviePosters.com. Remember, like this one 15 for 15% off your purchase. And of course, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin. Yeah. So next week, Colin, we are going old school. We are going back to the youngest version of Johnny Depp you will ever see. We're doing A Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm pretty
Nice.
excited about this.
Yeah, this is like we talked last Halloween, maybe we did Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
I'm a
It might have been next.
big Jason Voorhees fan. But I think the only Freddy movie I've ever seen is Freddy vs. Jason, so I'm looking forward to watching this movie for the first time.
Yeah. It's a classic. I mean, it's one of those that you have to see at least once in your life. And if Freddy versus Jason is your only touch with, like, now Freddy, or sorry, Jason, was Freddy versus Jason your only touch with that before watching Friday the 13th? Like, did you get the two
No.
for one? No?
No, I when I was I don't know why, but for some reason maybe because there was a, I think I watched I think I watched Friday the 13th part 4 first, and there was like some boobs in it,
Oh,
and so
right. This is coming back to me now. Yeah.
then I was inspired to maybe like check out the rest of the franchise.
Okay.
So I am more familiar with the Jason movies.
But Freddy versus Jason never made you want to go see a Freddy movie.
No,
No?
I don't know why.
Yeah. Okay. It's kind of like Alien versus Predator never made you want to go see an Alien movie.
Yes, this is also true. I don't know. I just, I'm real loyal to the guy that I like, and I'm just there for him. I'm not here to get new interests, I just
Right on. Well, there we go. So until next week when we watch A Nightmare on Elm Street, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And we'll see you then on I Used to Like This One.
Yeah, that is funny. I'm pretty sure I'm like the exact wrong person that those movies are targeted for. Like they're for sure made to like get the crossover.